Hello, I'm Joseph Harvey. I'm the editor of IHS Market Animal Health, which some of you may know previously as Animal Farm. This is our latest podcast, and what we're going to do is I'm going to talk to two industry experts about growth drivers, and that's growth drivers in the past, growth drivers now, and growth drivers in the future. Recently, we've launched a new one-off report that looks at growth drivers from 2020 to 2030, and we're going to discuss a bit of what's in that report and beyond. And we're going to look at how maybe COVID-19 has affected some of the growth trends in animal health, and how maybe it hasn't affected some of these trends. First of all, I'd like our two guests to introduce themselves. If we go alphabetically, Arthur, could you go first?
Yeah, hello, Joe. My name's Arthur Redpath. I used to be with Elanco Animal Health and then left Elanco about a year ago. And I'm currently working with Stonehaven Consulting and a couple of other small consultancy roles too. My background is in the industry. I have been in veterinary health industry for 3 decades, so more than 30 years, and more than 20 of those within the animal health industry with Novartis and Elanco in marketing roles and in technical services roles in the past, as well as doing some sales roles. So I've got an overview of every area of the business, and I've spent a lot of my time in companion animal and most of my time in the livestock and food and production animal sectors.
Thanks, Arthur. And should point out, Arthur is working with Stonehaven Consulting, which is also where our next guest comes from. Peter, if you could introduce yourself.
Hi, Joe. Hi, everyone. Peter McCarthy here. I'm the practice lead at Stonehaven for strategy and commercial matters. It's a pleasure to work with Arthur and members of the Stonehaven team. Prior to joining Stonehaven at the beginning of the year, I led the Henry Schein Animal Health business for over 10 years and enjoyed rapid growth and quite a lot of change in the industry. Prior to that, I was with Shearing Plough, now part of Merck, both here in the US and in the UK and Ireland.
Okay, thank you. So what we're going to do is it's going to be quite free flowing, and we're just going to look at what are growth drivers for animal health and how have they evolved over the years. And I suppose to look at what the growth drivers are now and maybe in the future, we have to go into the past. Arthur, could you sort of talk about maybe 10 years ago, what was deemed innovation in animal health? What was deemed some of the big growth drivers 10 years ago? And are they completely different? Is it a completely different world we're in now?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. This is a question which is often thrown around about the companies in which I worked, actually. What is the meaning of innovation? Because historically, animal health companies had good R&D companies that came along and said, you know, we've found this new molecule, we can tabulate it, we can put it into an injection, we can do it as an oral. And, you know, that's what you guys are going to sell in the market. And I think that there was a subtle change of actually looking at what you could develop on an accelerated growth pattern for your company, was looking at the market and finding out what were some of the things that were unmet needs within the marketplace. And some of those things obviously related back to bringing out new molecules, new chemistry, advancing into the preventative medicine space with vaccines, etc. And then identifying how you would build value for your end user, whether that's in the farm sector or whether it's, you know, something specifically that you had for the pet industry. But a lot of it was driven around about still serving a particular product. And I remember going into the CMO with one of the companies that I worked with and asking him about doing something slightly differently, where it was to build a service. And he looked at me and he quite, you know, without a single smile on his face, and he goes, "We're in the business of taking white powders and putting them into or onto animals. We're not into the business of bringing in innovative digital platforms that you want to do." I think that's changed now. If I had that conversation today, I think it would be, what is the whole universe? So what's the solution you're trying to give rather than the product that you're trying to give? Yeah. So what is it that the vet is trying to achieve? What is it that the farmer is trying to achieve? What is it that the pet owner wants to achieve? And where is innovation around about that? And the third thing that I pick up with this is that innovation isn't just about the product or the service. It's also in how you do things. So, you know, as I look at the industry now and I start to, you know, working in the consultancy role, it's, can you bring in innovation in how you service the needs? How can you actually contact the consumer? What are those sorts of things that you can do differently within your business to actually, you know, keep as much value within your company or be as efficient and lean as possible if you're in that startup phase? So those are interesting things in terms of innovation, which I've seen have definitely changed or moved on in 10 years. And before I hand over to Peter, this is an interesting one. I go back 30 years and innovation, when I was about to go into veterinary school, was a product called Ivermec. Ivermectin was just being launched into the market. And it was a huge product because it drove so much value within to the industry. And it actually met some of those needs. And you could see how farmers adopted innovation technology to become a lot more profitable. And that was the real start of a big driver in the industry, which has gone for the last quarter of a century. So it's been a fun time to have been in the industry at the start of that. And then we see what's happening now as we're moving into monoclonals and into, you know, those sorts of things. So I've had a great career and hopefully still got some time left in it to see how we develop.
Yeah. So I suppose it's not so much what is innovation, it is what are the needs of the modern day farmer or any customers or pet owners. What's your take on that, Peter, coming from a company or a sector that has moved from maybe just being seen as a distributor, a company that moves products around, to one that I presume now is more of a service, an aid to those end users?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Joe. You know, we tend to think of innovation along the value chain with the product, and it's much, much broader than that. And certainly, from the distributor's perspective, innovation is around customer service and around meeting customer needs. So delivery channels have broadened significantly in the last 10 years to meet a meat need, along with e-commerce platforms, of course, and more comprehensive offerings. And I made the comment during one of the Kisco research discussions that level of innovation has really made life easier for the end user. So innovation that makes life simpler for us as consumers, pet owners, or farmers, that is quicker and easier, is something that really distributors have delivered well on, I think, in recent years. Yeah, so I guess my point is innovation is along that whole value spectrum chain, not just at the product end.
And that's something that's happening to all companies. It's all major companies, I should say. You see companies like Zoetis, Elanco, Boehringer, Merck, they're not, from my point of view, not just focused on that next big blockbuster, although they still are. There's much more going on. There's telemedicine now. There's much more of that value across the whole chain of how can we help our customers at, and not necessarily with a drug or a vaccine. Do you think that's something that's been even more obvious in the last couple of years, or has there always been an undercurrent of that?
I think that's definitely accelerated in recent years, Joe, and I think you're going to see big companies try to develop that brand loyalty and product loyalty through whole packages and bundles of products and services that really tie the customer and consumer in to the company. And the other thing that I think that some of the more innovative companies are doing is trying to have a continuum of value from initial diagnostics. It's significant to see that traditional, if I could use that word, pharma companies are investing in the diagnostic space right the way through to alternative channels of delivery of the product or service. So I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, I think it's a good one too, because you've seen an acceleration probably in the last 4 or 5 years of this starting to go, and you can pick out some of the big players which we know in the market, Zoetis and Merck and what Elanco are doing. And definitely they grow and they're starting to look at across the wider value chain and cast the horizons into what we would call the adjacents. If you look at the central animal health market, probably somewhere around about $35 billion, then you look at the adjacents and the nutritional health, the diagnostic areas, etc., and that, you know, builds in about another $20 to $30 billion, and then theoretically beyond that you've got the digital health and telemedicine stuff, and that could put in probably about another $20 to $30 billion. So you've got $100 billion market which is right about animal care, but you've got a $35 billion market in the middle which is seen as traditional animal health. And if you're in a large player and you're trying to grow ahead of the market, that's actually difficult, isn't it? Because you are so much of the market. So the growth drivers actually start to be driven from an internal need to grow your company at 5 to 10% of the market. So you've got to look at the adjacents to move into and actually try to get that. And if you haven't got that innovative capacity, you then start to look at consolidation. So I think the industry will continue to grow, but there will also be changes within the structure as new companies move in or companies merge together and bring in different capabilities. There's also demand side growth which comes in on this too, in terms of what is needed and what's seen as value within the, you know, within the industry. So again, back to my point earlier, what is it that the farmer needs? What is it that the vet needs? What is it the pet owner needs? And some of that's actually driven by innovation outside animal health. So particularly a digital zone, some of those digital capabilities are now being brought in and used extensively in animal health and in animal production. And that gives an opportunity to exploit and expand that market too. And the ability to do that is something which has been driven very significantly within the last 2 to 3 years and can only increase in the situation that we're in. So I do think we'll see further changes within animal health companies, how they're structured, who they are, how they're funded as well, as they move more into these other zones.
Feel free to disagree with me, but from my point of view, maybe 10 years ago, a lot of the major animal health companies kind of looked a bit the same. They maybe had competing products in similar areas, or they were going after similar assets through acquisitions. And now maybe with these adjacencies you're talking about, will these major animal health companies actually have distinct areas that they might play in? Like one will be particularly adept at diagnostics, one might be have a bigger portfolio of nutritionals, one might be the go-to for digital animal health, or do you think actually they're all going after these, and again over time they will start again competing in very similar areas?
Joe, I think one of the big differences between now and 10 years ago is that when looking at the big pharma companies is that you now have the pure play animal health companies like Zoetis, like Elanco more recently, and in my world distribution, pure play in the form of Covetrus distribution, not connected to bigger parent corporations. And the thinking there, of course, has been that this would unlock shareholder value. So I think you do have a more intense focus, and as a result of that, I think there is a management focus on how can we serve the needs of the customer better in a more holistic way. Yeah. And that therefore has, as Arthur points out, led to traditional big pharma moving into adjacencies such as diagnostics, such as predictive genetics, of course, innovation in new therapy areas, but and then delivery and effective delivery through use of digital and e-commerce platforms. For me, that's the big change between now and 10 years ago. Whether there's going to be one company that focuses, say, on and becomes more dominant, say, in the diagnostic sector or the nutrition sector or whatever, I don't know. I think they're all looking at that. You know, Merck particularly invested in digital offerings. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting one, because I think that you could see with the larger players, the guys who are over $1 billion, the $1.52 billion threshold, which is there, that there's a potential to actually be able to differentiate themselves specifically around areas of capability and expertise. So you could see how they could tease themselves apart from that and give themselves blue water. The other part that I think is interesting about that is to build up that expertise is expensive, and then you need to be able to exploit it to get that shareholder value back. So if you've got a real strong lead in digital, that might be where you go. If you've got a real strong lead, for example, in monoclonal production, is that where you're going to go? And you might be seen as the company which moves to that. And I think one of the areas which interests me just now is if you look at the demand that's coming in from society to look at the future of food production and how that plays within supply chain, within environment, etc. How does that open up for a company that could maybe go in and be the leader in that area, the category lead, and then really grow that? So I see that definitely in the top five or six. What that means for the mid-tier players, that's not clear yet. They might all look the same or be similar, but then there's a great role for the startups, isn't it, to be the generation of some of that innovation to then choose the right route to market. So I think it's a very interesting stage that we're actually in within animal health.
And I suppose that's another sort of facet of animal health that wasn't around 10 years ago, is the amount of startups. And these aren't just startups that are just, oh, we're all going to do monoclonal antibodies. No, there's so many different types of technology, digital technologies, diagnostics, et cetera, et cetera. And it's actually quite hard to keep up with some of them. Sometimes new ones coming out every week, and the opportunities for the bigger companies to partner with them must be absolutely overwhelming at the moment, which is a great thing. We're going to have to move around a bit in our animal health time machine, because I want to talk about growth drivers now. And the word now comes with a caveat. There's COVID, pre-COVID and post-COVID, or sort of intra-COVID. I just wondered, if we go back to pre-COVID, I just wonder if there are any particular growth drivers that you think are outstanding or really are going to be fascinating for animal health in the next few years. You can pick anyone you like, just anything that you think always stands out as being a really prominent growth driver.
That's a fun one, Joe, because you know, if you go back 12 months into this, I would say that, you know, just pre-COVID, you could see there was a big interest going around about veterinary diagnostics and moving veterinary diagnostics more into the practitioner's hands or more into the animal owner's hands, getting real-time diagnostics through linking up with digital. So that seemed to me to be a big potential growth driver in an area that was probably underweight within the industry. And, you know, we were also starting to look at what's the flip over in digital health coming into, you know, from human health into animal care, and how does that look into a different space within companion, and then what does it mean for large animal digital? How that will look post-COVID, I don't know, but certainly those things that will be there. And then, and obviously, you've had the immediate rise of things, you know, products like Cytopoint, which are the next generation as you move into the monoclonals, and potentially the oncology. That's what I'd have said 12 months ago. And I you know, those things that it's difficult to stop. It's like a super tanker, isn't it? You know, that there was momentum in behind them, so they'll probably come through, but they may take a different format as we move into the COVID scene or the para-COVID world that we're faced with for the next 2 or 3 years. So that's how I would see things at this particular point.
Let me just add a little bit there, Joe. I think that those drivers that were there pre-COVID, in many respects, have just been accelerated through this pandemic. And they were there. Ones that are talked about a little less at the moment versus what we were talking about 12 months ago, to my mind, particularly includes a development and expansion of geographies. And particularly, I'm talking about China, that huge middle class there, spending more in the pet care arena was very rapid growth. But since COVID, you know, some of those growth drivers, digital alternative channels for the end user to receive products, have really been accelerated. And as Arthur says, diagnostics, you know, diagnostics are growing faster than the overall market, and I think that they're set to grow even faster. And particularly coming back to how we all wish to lead our lives with more convenience, faster information, you know, patient-side testing that is quicker, more accurate, and easier to use, I think is really going to happen. And I just wanted to say that through all of this, despite the challenges of COVID, I think the veterinarian is still going to remain central to delivery of that medical care. So, you know, diagnostics, you need to see the animal, you need to get the blood sample, right? But that's still going to be there. So that's my take on it. Others may disagree, but, you know, that's a little overview.
Well, the key word I picked up on there is convenience, which might be might seem like a flimsy word, but actually, as we've seen over the last however many months, things have been inconvenient, things have been impossible. And from my point of view, it seems like the animal health industry has been really adaptable, and the vets as well, and they've adapted, and they've actually, it's transpired that it hasn't been as big an impact as we thought due to ingenuity, a bit of technical support, and a bit of adaptation helping the convenience of how animals are treated. Now we're talking about growth drivers from now to 2030. And this is the report that we've recently collaborated on and published. And there's a lot more in that report. And this report was published probably as COVID was hitting Europe and then the United States. Is it too broad of me to say that if you're looking as far ahead as 2030, that nothing should be taken off the table for animal health? The growth drivers are still in place for this industry. Is there any aspect of it that's going to be largely hindered by what's happened with social distancing or the just general quarantining?
Maybe I have a crack at this, Joe. I think those growth drivers are still absolutely going to be there. And we've talked about them as an industry for many years. You know, the need for safe, source-verified protein is still going to be there. And the increasing demand for that high-quality protein is still going to be there. And then on the companion animal side of things, you know, we see increased ownership. We see increased expenditures. We see the whole millennial effect. Those things are still going to be there. Yeah. I think the point of speculation for many is around future consolidation. There may be some consolidation as investors look at those mid-tier companies. What are they going to do? And there's a lot of speculation around that. And finally, I think the separation between the world that I came from of distribution. What is the world of distribution? What is the world of manufacturer? What is the world of innovators? Those lines are going to be blurred, increasingly going to be blurred. So that's interesting. That's my take. So trying to get a handle on that as we look to the future, and every company really needs to try and take a view on that. I think informed information and reports could be very helpful.
So far Peter and I have not managed to disagree, and I'm not going to really disagree with him on this one too. I think the fundamental growth drivers are there, and it's probably too early to say whether they've been shuffled around on the deck of the ship. So you may find that they take relative importances in a slightly different way. So for example, one of the questions that I've been asked on several occasions is, what's the impact of the supply chain of where we take our food from? Do we still need to feed the world with this amount of protein, and that's going to be a driver? What happens GDP, because does that drive people to actually look at consuming more lower cost meats, and how does that is produced? Or does it mean that people spend less on animal protein and move to the slightly higher quality cuts and those sorts of things? And that's underpinned by what happens with the health crisis, in a way, where the people move to a less animal protein diet to a more plant protein diet, and how we respond to that. But that's still driven by the need to put protein into people's diet, and that's going to be there. So how that looks and how the industry responds will be in different things, because you may need different mixes of products, different services to actually get that there. And I think the other element which has started to come through is, as you move into the short term, there's the potential for the consolidation. Midterm, you might see different technologies coming in. And one area which has got a lot of investigation just lately is the vet's role in One Health. Because if you look at how do you contain future epidemics, do you need to have a greater degree of innovation from the veterinary health sector to actually work alongside the human health sector? And does that give a growth opportunity to go back to infectious disease control in terms of the overall animal health and production cycle, as we look at how we meet some of those economic needs? So some of those things are fascinating questions and may take 2 to 3 years before they start to play into how the industry starts to change shape at that particular point in time.
Yeah. What I've heard from animal health companies is that there hasn't been that much delay to R&D projects. And if anything, the major R&D projects can carry on. And because there's some of these programs have such a long time span that the time can be made up in the future. Yes, you raise lots of interesting points there. Of course, with anything with COVID or any sort of predictions, time will tell. Another interesting, I mean, there's so many micro trends that are coming out. Another interesting one I thought was the fact that pet owners are becoming more in tune with the health of their pets, mm-hmm. because people in general are becoming more interested in nutrition and health. And that has just soared during COVID, thinking about, are we eating the right stuff? Therefore, are our pets getting the right nutrition? And maybe that will drive sales of prebiotics, probiotics, and other nutritionals as well. I wondered, Arthur, you mentioned zoonotic diseases and One Health there. And I suppose One Health has always been this strange concept that the animal health industry seems to find really easy to explain, but maybe other industries don't. And I think it's been really good to see words like zoonoses, One Health, pandemics in the media, and actual explanations of what they are, and understanding that a disease can move from animals to humans. which many people may not have known in the past. I just wondered if you think that will have actually any effect on research in animal health or human health or any area. Is that this increased exposure actually changed anything?
I think it has actually. I do think that there'll be more awareness to actually look at what the impact is of animal health on human society and on the global picture in general. Going into those areas where future diseases could come from, and how do we prepare for that to go into the control? And do future pandemic controls involve how do you actually treat and prevent disease in the animals? You know, alongside. So that, I think that's definitely something which is interesting. And something which plays in my mind is that in veterinary health, we've been working with vaccines for a long time, and we've got a lot of experience of working in vaccines. And while we're gonna step up a lot more research and development in vaccine and preventative medicine, which could then kick over into human health for the future. So is that something which is likely to go for and, you know, into the, maybe some of the companies which are still associated with human healthcare companies, or does that look for future partnerships between pure play animal health companies and, you know, pure play healthcare companies? Could they see that, you know, strangely almost coming back together again?
Yeah.
And finally, when you look at it, some of the world's leading epidemiologists have actually worked in animal health before they've worked in human health. And you can see how this can come together and start to play as we become more vigilant. If this, you know, continues to go on for quite some time, I think that level of never again will go up, and therefore animal health could assume a bigger importance for the planet.
Mm, yeah. And maybe it's a bad thing that COVID-19 even exists, but if there's some sort of glimmer of positivity, that perhaps it has shown how important animal health is, and also kind of how innovative the animal health industry is and can be in the future. So if we can take some positivities away from it, I think those are two. I think if I could push you, I'd like to end on maybe a couple of predictions. I know we should never trust predictions, but this sort of the report that we're talking about is growth drivers all the way out to 2030. And maybe put you on the spot here and say, give me a prediction of something you think will become more common, or something that will happen in the animal health industry by 2030. What's the landscape going to look like in 9.5 years time? I know that's a difficult one, but it can be any aspect of the industry. Who would like to go first?
So let me throw a couple out, Joe. I think the way that we purchase and consume veterinary medicines will change. So no big surprise that online purchase and use of e-platforms is going to take a much bigger share of the way we consume and purchase medicines. That's the first one. I think you're going to see medicines today that are very expensive, which is traditional, you know, with innovation around the monoclonal antibody sector, becoming much more affordable as you see many new entrants coming in. I mean, just as an aside, Stonehaven called out 600 startup businesses in the animal health sector. That's quite amazing. And telemedicine's here to stay. Definitely is here to stay. Those are my three.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody knows in the industry I'm a bit of a data freak, so I would predict that the industry that we know as the core industry will be in excess of 100, you know, billion by 2030. And I think that will be driven by innovation. Yeah.
That's tripling in 10 years.
Yeah. And I think it will be driven by innovation, because you see the big growth jumps have been delivered through innovation. So go back, you've had parasiticides, which have done an awful lot. We've seen that just recently. Evidence of new medicine coming in with MABs. And I think the thing that will drive it will be access into the newer technology, which is in the human field. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some really big breakthroughs merging genetics and health control. And this is why I think it'll be the big one. It's things like CRISPR technology coming in. And do you actually develop up the pneumonia-resistant pig, the coccidia-resistant chicken, and those sorts of things? Because that would really be a big jump, which would put in an awful lot of value into health and productivity to meet some of those needs that we've got around a bit of the economic base. So I can see a real surge potentially through good innovation technology and the need to innovate within those big companies that we see today.
And I've not worked in the industry, and maybe I'm only a journalist, but maybe I'll put some predictions, or maybe like a Christmas list of things I'd like to see. I think we will see many more acquisitions of startups that come up with some really interesting molecules or products or digital technology. I think we will see billions spent on digital technology acquisitions in the animal health sector and digital technology R&D. And I think the top 10 biggest animal health companies now will be significantly disrupted by players in the pet food, pet nutrition world, moving more into core animal health and building players that are upwards of $10 billion. Anyway, that would be an exciting story for me to write about. Might not happen, but it's a distinct possibility. And personally, I'd love to see a startup be able to build up its sales to become a big player, although I don't think that would happen. And I suppose those predictions, from my point of view, about the animal nutrition, pet food, animal care, animal health worlds, all builds into what Arthur and Peter were talking about these lines that are just blurring. The animal health industry is not just a 30 to 35 billion industry anymore. It could easily be 100 billion in 10 years' time, but that's due to the innovation, due to acquisitions, due to investors, and due to the fact the boundaries of animal health are just expanding in ways that 5-10 years ago weren't thought of, into digital areas, into nutritional areas as well. If there's any last thoughts on the road to 2030 that you'd like to add, just quickly let me know now.
Well, let's just say, Joe, great to have a discussion sharing this. And as we look and plan for the future, you know, you've got to try and make the best informed decisions you can. And, you know, the way to do that is by getting the best information and data sources. So data is king. Data is important. That's my final thought.
Thank you, Peter. Arthur?
Yeah. I think that if you go back and you look at the reports and things that we produced, you see that the veterinary animal health industry has been really a growth industry based upon innovation and innovative people doing the best of what they can do with. So that's informed the business to get it where it is today. And I'm like Peter, I think that the more use of data, the more understanding is going to drive it further forward. And we've got more data sources to use, many more. So I see no reason why it shouldn't be an exciting industry that's fundamental to not just animal health, but to human health and how the planet survives as well. So great industry to be involved in.
And maybe to that point, it's built upon very clever people, but actually the types of clever people that are in animal health are changing. It's people with tech backgrounds are also being included now, and not just business backgrounds or vet backgrounds or animal sciences. It's the innovators are changing themselves. Okay, that's brilliant. Obviously, we've been talking for about 30 minutes or so, but there's a lot more of this sort of information in our Growth Drivers 2020 to 2030 report. Please do get in contact if you want to find out more about that. That's a collaboration between IHS Markets, Animal Health, and Stonehaven Consulting. So once again, thanks, Peter, and thanks, Arthur. and do send in any questions if you have them.